Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors. Close the blinds. Change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr and Matt Fulton.
On today's podcast, myself and Matt are joined by investigative journalist Florian Flade from Tagesschau.de, which is the German public broadcaster's media outlet. And we discuss his investigative journalism work on the Nord Stream pipeline attack, and we find out all the latest evidence about who may be responsible for it. Stay tuned to find out more. If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber. All subscribers directly help this podcast stay on the air. If you become a subscriber, you will get access to our special Patreon-only show called Extra Shot that immediately follows our episodes of Espresso Martini. All you need to do is go to patreon.com/secretsandspies. Or if you look at your show notes, you will see a link that will take you directly there. Lastly, if you enjoy this episode, please do leave a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. All reviews help juice our algorithm and help other people discover the show. Without further ado, let's begin. Thank you for listening and take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, Florian. How are you doing?
I'm doing really fine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Now, where are you based in Germany?
I am based in Berlin.
You're in Berlin. Excellent. So you're coming from us from Berlin. So today's a very international conversation. We've got Matt in the US, me in London, you in Berlin. It's almost like a spy movie in itself, this.
Yeah. Isn't
it? Just see somebody in Vienna and Moscow, and then we're covered, really. But there we go. So, Florian, just for the benefit of listeners who may not have heard our previous interview, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm an investigative journalist working for the German public broadcaster ARD, and I am working in an investigative unit of several reporters, and I cover topics regarding national security, meaning terrorism, extremism, espionage, intelligence-related stuff, also cyber, some crime, investigations that I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, today we're here to talk about the Nord Stream attack. And that's also why Matt's joining us today, because he had a great interview with Shane Harris a little while ago. So I think let's just start with a bit of an overview. Can you just talk to us about what the Nord Stream pipelines are and sort of why they're important and why they have been considered controversial as well?
Yes, the Nord Stream pipelines are, or better say they were, two pipelines, better said four pipes, two pipes belonging to Nord Stream 1 and two belonging to Nord Stream 2. Both of them are natural gas pipelines running through the Baltic Sea, connecting Russia with Germany. And Nord Stream 1, the construction of Nord Stream 1 was finished in 2011. And it was up and running, so it was delivering natural gas from Russia to Germany that was then transported to other European countries. And then there was Nord Stream 2, and the construction of Nord Stream 2 was finished in 2021. And the main reason why it was constructed is to increase the gas delivery from Russia to Germany. And Nord Stream 2 was not in operation yet, due to some bureaucratic issues within the European Union. And of course, there were also American sanctions regarding Nord Stream 2, because it was a very controversial project, energy project. And this is what Nord Stream was. And it was highly controversial, especially in Eastern Europe. Several Eastern European governments opposed the construction of Nord Stream. So did the US government. They warned that Mr. Putin would use the gas delivery system as a weapon to blackmail states, and they said Mr. Putin would get too much power over the European energy market. And there was also another reason why Nord Stream was highly controversial, and that because of the transit fee. So many companies, many governments earned a lot of money because the Russian gas, before the construction of the Nord Stream pipelines, was running through their country, Ukraine, for example. So there was transit fee, and that meant the construction of both Nord Stream pipelines meant that this gas was directly flowing from Russia to Germany, so no more transit fees, so less money, and the gas flow would bypass several countries.
Florian, thanks for coming on the show again to talk about your great reporting. It's wonderful to speak with you. I was just wondering if you could talk through some of the lead up to the attack. I understand there was some indications passed from Dutch intelligence that something may be coming toward the pipeline.
Yeah, so me and my colleagues, we have been investigating this case from a journalistic side for 2 years now, and we heard in our investigation that the Dutch military intelligence service passed some information to the US side in the summer of 2022, so several months before the attacks happened. We heard that the CIA obtained information regarding a possible Ukrainian plot to blow up the pipelines. And the Dutch intelligence service told the Americans, that's what we heard, the Ukrainian commando is planning to blow up the pipelines. They want to rent a boat in Scandinavia. They want to rent a boat especially in Sweden. So we heard Sweden was mentioned. And they would use divers to dive down to set some explosive devices on the pipelines to blow them up. And we heard that this information contained a certain date, meaning that this attack would happen in June of 2022.
Yeah, thank you for that. Can you talk to us about the actual attack itself and sort of what happened and the similarities to this Ukrainian attack plan?
Yeah, so at end of September 2022, there were some bubbles coming up in the Baltic Sea. In the early morning hours, there was some seismographic activity noticed, similar to an earthquake in the Baltic Sea. And this was the result of an attack, of a bomb attack, an attack that was done with explosive devices in the depth of about 70 to 80 meters in the Baltic Sea, so on the ocean ground. And somebody blew up both of the Nord Stream pipelines, and the pipes, they bursted open. So the natural gas was flowing out of it, creating these bubbles in the ocean. There was I think it was a Swedish and also Danish military helicopters flying over their military planes and taking footage that, that we could all see then on the news. The bubbles were coming up in the ocean. And first, people had no idea if this was just an accident. But then within a few days, the people that were looking into this case were sure that this was not an accident, but was an attack. It was somebody had planted explosive devices. And
And how deep down are those pipes? Sorry.
Yes, 70 to 80 meters deep. So it's not that deep, to be honest. I mean, the Baltic Sea is not that deep. So 70 to 80 meters. And what I learned in my investigation is that these pipes, they are not, from the whole length of the pipes, they are not all, out there on the ocean ground visible. Some parts of the pipes are buried in sand just to give them more stability. So to have them fix on the ocean ground, but especially these areas where the explosive devices were planted, the pipes were basically laying open and free in the ocean.
So most of the investigation centers around this sailing yacht called the Andromeda. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that boat, how it came into the investigation, and then if there's any information, at least out in open source that's available, that places that yacht, the Andromeda, at the location of where the pipeline was sabotaged on that day. Do we have that connection yet?
So we heard that German investigators, because this became a criminal investigation in Germany in October, so about a week or 10 days after the attack happened, the German General Federal Prosecutor opened a case. And so there's a police investigation now, a criminal case investigation. We heard that at the end of 2022, in December, maybe early January, the German investigators got an information that's coming from the intelligence side, saying that they should be on the lookout for a sailboat, a sail yacht, that the attackers allegedly used the sailboat for the attack, and that they started their journey from the German Baltic coast, and they rented this boat. So the German investigators were looking into this. They were talking to several sailboat and yacht charter companies on the Baltic coastline of Germany. And in the end, they did find, after a few weeks, they did find a sailboat that matched the description that they got from the intelligence side. And it was the Andromeda. And it's just a regular sailboat. I mean, hundreds, probably thousands of them are, at the Baltic Sea, the North Sea. They are used by private people for their sailboat journeys, So just a regular thing that you could rent. And this boat was rented in early September. And it left the harbor of Rostock at the German Baltic coast. And then there was about a 10-day journey where this boat crossed the Baltic Sea. And German investigators looked into this boat. They did some forensic investigation on that boat, and they found traces of a high explosive, an explosive that could be used underwater. And they found it on the table in that boat, in that sailboat. There was probably the people who rented it and carried out the attack did not really clean the boat properly. So that's why these traces were still left. They also found some fingerprints and also DNA. traces, and of course, they talked to the person that rented the boat too.
So this happened late September. Is that a time where one would usually take a pleasure sailing yacht out on the Baltic for a few days? Is that decent weather around this time of year out there?
It is probably the last. If you're lucky, you will get some summer weather at that time. And we heard that when they were going for their journey, there were plenty of boats on the Baltic Sea, so it was pretty busy out there. It was not like there was a lonely boat sailing sailing the Baltic Sea. No, there were probably dozens or hundreds of boats, private boats, going out for the pleasure journey. So, yeah.
Actually, on that, have any eyewitnesses that have come forward just sort of seeing the boat near the pipeline at all?
Not near the pipeline, but we know that there are some witnesses who said, who came out and talked to investigators and saying, I saw the boat and I saw the people on that boat, and I can describe them to you in a harbor in Sweden, for example, and also in Denmark, because there was a stopover on the island of Bornholm. It's a Danish island. And there was also a stopover in the Swedish harbor. And yeah, there are witnesses describing various people. Some witnesses were describing five men and a woman. Some said there was probably no woman part of the team was on the boat. And of course, there was the person who rented the boat to the suspects, also saying there were several men and a woman that came to the harbor in Rostock, boarded the boat, and then sailed off on the Baltic Sea.
Yeah, and we know it was there because of sort of maritime surveillance and radar, is that right?
I cannot confirm. I heard that there is some information regarding radar, especially coming from the Swedish investigation side, because apparently the Swedish military, Swedish Navy, they have a really, really good radar system covering also the Baltic Sea. What I heard is from the German investigator side that they were looking into all the technical stuff, the computer that they found on the sailboat, and that they were able to, basically do a reconstruction of the journey that they did. They could follow, you know, where they have been.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Thank you for that. Can you talk to us a bit about the sort of the early suspects in the German investigation?
Yeah. The early suspects, because the only thing that German investigators had in the beginning was basically an email that was sent to the guy who then rented the boat to the attackers or the attack suspects. There was an email saying, I want to rent the boat on that date. And so, and the email exchange, of course. And in the email, and then one of the following emails attached, there were pictures of passports. And it was just pictures taken of two passports, Eastern European passports, Bulgarian. One of them, I remember, was Bulgarian passport. So what the German investigators had, they had this email address and they had these passport pictures. And so they came up in the end with a suspect. There's some information that it was that the suspect was used because of facial recognition software and other means. And one of the first suspects that came up was a Ukrainian soldier. A member of the Ukrainian military, a pretty young soldier, and his picture was apparently used in one of these passports that was used to rent the boat. And I have to say, these passports in the end turned out to be forged passports, so not completely faked, but, you know, forged, and they put in the picture of this Ukrainian soldier. And, of course, then German investigators tried to find out, was this man part of the team, of the crew of the Andromeda? Was he present on that boat? So this was one of the first or the early suspects. Yeah.
Forgive me. What were the with the identifications, the passports? What nationality were the passports?
One of them I remember was Bulgarian. I think if I remember correctly, the other one was a Romanian passport.
Mm. Okay. No Brazilian, because I know they've been faked a lot, and Canadian, I think, the other ones. But no, okay. Matt, I'll hand to you.
Yeah, I was curious. It comes up a few times in your reporting, at least the translation that I read, the word false flag.
Yeah.
Right? As to suggest that, like, this evidence suggests that it could be the Ukrainians, but also might not be. And I'm not asking this to suggest that it is or it isn't one way or the other. I don't know. I was wondering if there's more evidence to suggest that there could be something to that angle, or that while there may have been Ukrainian individuals involved in the attack, that their loyalties may not have been to Kyiv.
There are certain possibilities why this could be a false flag attack, of course. One could be that it was Ukrainian nationals who did it, but they didn't know that they were hired by the Russians. They were just tricked into this, and they thought they are doing it for the Ukrainian nation. The other possibility could be that these were just fake Ukrainians and turn out to be Russian nationals. Another possibility could be that the sailboat, the Andromeda, has nothing to do with the attacks. And in the end, it was, I don't know, a Russian ship, a Russian submarine that was involved in the attack. There were Russian ships present in the area where these attacks later happened. A few weeks before, there's also some media coverage about this. Some colleagues found out that there were these Russian ships present at that time. And some of them were pretty, I'm pretty convinced that they could be, a part of, I mean, that these Russian ships could be involved in something like this. Yeah, because they were what they would, what you would call a dark vessel, you know, that they would turn off their signals. So you cannot really trace them back. We talked to our sources very early on and asked, so what do you think about false flag? And they said, with all the means that they have and all the methods that they used and also having parts of the military involved and intelligence, they said, we looked into this. We know that there were Russian ships present in that area. We know that. But the strongest indication that the ship was involved is the evidence that we found on the Andromeda. So, I mean, there was the explosives. There was, but of course, there's a possibility of a false flag attack. If you ask me personally, I don't think it was a false flag attack.
It gets very complicated if you go down that road there. There's a lot of assumptions you have to make. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very complicated. I have no idea why. I mean, of course, the Russians could blow up the pipeline, but the Russians just, you know, they switched off the gas supply. I mean, they could just not deliver any gas anymore. Why would you blow up your own infrastructure? There's one thing that I could think of why it might be the case, because of course there were contracts signed, you know, so contracts for gas delivery, and not delivering gas would mean a violation of the contract. Mm. And this would mean like paying hundreds of millions, maybe today would be billions in compensation to the Europeans. So maybe blowing up a pipeline would mean, I'm sorry, it was a terrorist attack. I want to deliver gas, but I cannot. I'm so sorry. So this just to bypass some form of contract violation. But I don't think this is a very strong motive. And what I truly think is very strange about false flag. If you do a false flag, then you have to wave the false flag at one point, you know, and it's a very strange. Also, if you look at how the Kremlin is talking about this, how Putin is talking about it, they never mention Ukraine. They always talk about the Americans who did it, the British. I don't know. They never pinpoint. They never point the finger to Ukraine. It's very strange.
With the Kremlin reaction, there's this interesting. I call it interesting. That article by Seymour Hersh that's now pretty much been largely debunked, so far as I know, where he claims that the Americans are somehow responsible for this. But it looks like the Americans are actually trying to prevent this, from what I see. But
at least that's what we heard, but also several other colleagues from, Washington Post in Germany. There's also Spiegel investigating this. So we heard that Americans tried to prevent an attack on Nord Stream, even though the U.S. government was not supporting the Nord Stream project at all. And Mr. Biden said during this press conference, there's this famous press conference where he said, we will end Nord Stream. And then he was asked by a journalist colleague, how will you do this? And the president said, believe me, we have the means of doing this. But he probably meant more sanctions and more economic pressure to prevent the project and not, you know, blowing it up. But
Yeah, totally. Is there any more information on sort of the new suspects on the German investigation that we haven't covered? Because I know one of them in particular is a professional scuba diver.
Yes, this is pretty much the newest information that we reported on. And it's also been reported now by other media. So there's some confirmation. There's also confirmation coming from German government, to be honest. So there is one main suspect in the German investigation, one person that is now wanted with an arrest warrant, with an international arrest warrant. And it is a Ukrainian national. And this person is a professional scuba diver. Hmm. And what we heard is that in early this year, German Foreign Intelligence Service, the BND, obtained information coming from another intelligence service, a foreign intelligence service, They were providing BND with some information about new suspects with names and some information of how the attack was carried out. But we also heard that this foreign intelligence service told the German side, you cannot use this information in the criminal investigation for reasons of source protection. So we want our source to be protected, but we think these people did it. So there were names on this paper or whatever they sent over. So the German side looked into these new suspects, and there is some indication that one of them was present on the Andromeda. And yeah, this is a person, this Ukrainian scuba diver, where the German investigators think that he was present in Germany. There was a car came into this, speed trap camera, speed trap, how do you say it in English? It's a speed camera.
Yeah, speed trap's good.
Yeah, speed trap. So a vehicle was caught in the speed trap in September 2022, so right at the time around where the attacks happened, in Germany, in northern Germany at the Baltic coast. And the German investigators found out that this car belongs to a transport company, to some kind of a transport company from Ukraine. So it's a car with a Ukrainian, it's a Ukrainian car registered in Ukraine. And the driver of that vehicle, he was driving back and forth between Ukraine and Germany several times. So the next time he came to Germany, he was questioned by the police. And he was asked, did you transport some people to the Baltic coast in September 2022? And the driver, that's what we heard, the driver said, yes, I did. I did transport some people to the Baltic coast. I have no idea who they are. I have no idea what they did. I'm not involved in this attack at all. And then German police presented him with several pictures. And on one picture, when they showed him one picture, he said, yeah, that's the guy that I remember. And of course, there's also this picture taken by the speed trap. And apparently you can see this Ukrainian suspect sitting right next to the driver on that picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. and he's a very professional scuba diver. He was a diving teacher. He was part of a diving school in Ukraine, in Kiev. And we also heard that there's also a woman suspect, even though there's no arrest warrant for her yet, but she's also part of this diving school in Ukraine. Also a very professional diver. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, with the diving in the Nord Stream pipeline, does it require any kind of like specialist diving, or could literally pretty much any normal diver, but with some experience of explosives, be able to go down there?
Yeah, there was a lot of controversy about this. And also in Germany, people were saying, you know, it's not possible to do this with a, you know, for divers to go all the way down there to place some explosives, and it's too deep, and you cannot do it with a sailboat and several divers, and you would need hundreds of kilos or even tons of explosives. And to be honest, this is all not true. I mean, there were some experts, they were talking to, the investigators talked to several experts about this. They said, what would you need? What is the amount of explosives? And can you do it as a diver? Can you go down there and plant the explosive devices? And you can. And we did a documentary last year about the Nord Stream attacks, and we hired divers to go down. And these divers, they went down, they took our cameras, they went down, they found the pipeline, they were diving down the pipeline. So you can do it. And to be honest, there are divers, military divers, that can go even deeper than that, like 70 or 80 meters, even deeper. You can do it. It is dangerous. Of course, it's dangerous to do it. And you have to, you know, to have the certain skills, and you do it with a mixture of certain oxygen. It's not easy doing it. And going down and going up again takes hours. And the time that you have to operate in that depth in the ocean is probably around 20 to 30 minutes only that you can work down there. But you can go down and do it. And just remember, from what we know, the Andromeda sailboat, the journey was about 10 days or even longer. So it was not like they did it in 2 days or 3 days. So it looks like they had some time during this.
Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back. Thank you. just makes me wonder as well with the explosive they used. I don't know. Has there been any indication of like whether it was a remote or a timed explosive?
I don't know. And I have not heard that the investigators know for sure. I heard that the suspicion is that they used a time detonator.
Yeah, yeah, that would make some sense. Because, yeah, you wouldn't want your boat over that as that goes off, would you?
Yeah, and some people say it's too deep to have it, to detonate it via remote signal, too far out in the ocean to do it from the coastline. One thing when it comes to the explosives is, what I found really, really interesting, German investigators came down to the conclusion that you would need for every place where you put the explosive device to blow up all of these four pipelines. For every single explosive device, you would need about 20 kilos to 25 kilos of explosives. And you have four places where they put the devices, so that would turn out to be just 100 kilos of explosives. And of course, you can transport 100 kilos with a sailboat. Yeah.
And would they have had to do that over successive dives, or could they have done it in one?
Successive dives, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Do we know what time the explosion happened?
Yeah, at night time. Very early mornings.
Okay, so it would have been covered by darkness, etc., for that to happen. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's this interesting narrative arc, I guess, that developed over the course of your reporting, at least reading it, you know, over a couple years, iterations of it, yeah, of a growing divide between, say, German authorities, who are quite keen to follow the evidence that points to the Ukrainians, right? Versus, let's say, the Polish authorities, who are, you know, oh, here's this list of suspicious Russians that we think you should look at. Or, oh, here's this suspect in Warsaw that the Germans want. Oops, he left the country before we could get to him. Perhaps, you know, not as keen to follow the evidence towards a conclusion that, you know, they wouldn't really like. I was wondering if you could talk to that sort of split and whether that would prevent us from getting some sort of final answer of what happened here.
Yeah, I mean, all the people that are involved in this investigation, also the German government, know that this is a very, very sensitive topic. I mean, we are talking about probably a state being involved and behind all this. And when it comes to NATO, to the EU and to alliances, and the question, should we support Ukraine? And, you know, this is all very, very controversial, of course. The thing with the Polish government or the Polish authorities is it's quite interesting. We heard last year that the German investigation found out that there was a stopover in Poland and that the boat was present in a Polish harbor. So, of course, we asked the Polish authorities, we have some colleagues in Poland, and we asked them, is that true? Can you confirm that the Andromeda sailboat was present in Poland? And first, they wouldn't answer. Then they would, in a way, confirm it. And in the end, they confirmed and said, yeah, of course, the sailboat was present in Poland, and there was a stopover. And it was even checked by the Polish Coast Guard. And we had an interview, it's in our documentary, with somebody high up in the Polish Interior Ministry, someone who is responsible for security issues within the Polish authorities. And he gave us an interview and he said, the people on the boat, they were just tourists. None of them had any training in carrying out such attack. And I was wondering, how do you know? I mean, the Polish Coast Guard were just checking them just regularly because there were foreigners coming with a boat to Poland, just a regular check, how would you know what the skill set of these people is or their training or how do you know? So very strange, but he gave it on camera. We have that interview. We have it in the documentary. It was very, very strange. And then in the end, we also heard that the German investigators asked the Polish side, can you please provide us with the CCTV footage from the harbor? Can you give it to us? The Polish side wouldn't answer. They wouldn't send it over. And then later they said all the CCTV footage is gone. It's deleted because of data protection rules and whatever. So we don't have footage. And my colleague was there in that harbor. There are lots of cameras, lots of CCTV cameras. And then the Polish side came up and said, "Oh, now we looked into this case a bit further and you know more detailed, and now we have some information that's very interesting. So here's a list of suspects, and they were on the Andromeda. And you're right; these are probably the attackers, but they are all Russian nationals, and they are Russian intelligence people." And the German side was like, "How? Why did you know holiday people turn into Russian intelligence operatives?" And they looked at this list of names, and what I heard from a source was, the German side did not believe that this was just, you know, real. They would just come up with some very, very common Russian names and would just say, let's say there's Sergei Ivanov, and Sergei Ivanov, he's FSB. Maybe there is a Sergei Ivanov in the FSB. Probably there is. But it's not something that the German investigators could really work with. It's very suspicious behavior from the Polish side, to be honest. And yeah, now there's this prime suspect. And this prime suspect lived, he's a Ukrainian, but he lived in Poland. He lived in a small town south of Warsaw. And he has a wife, he has children, and he lived there. We heard that he moved there just after the attacks. Just at end of 2022 that he moved to Poland. And yeah, the German side in June, they asked the Polish authorities to arrest this guy. They said, "This is our prime suspect. Here's the arrest warrant. Can you please arrest him?" And first, the Polish prosecutor, he was kind of, "Yeah, I'm going to look into this. Let's see." And then he was gone. The prime suspect was just gone. And he left Poland for Ukraine. And my colleagues from magazine Der Spiegel, they reported that he was even transported in a Ukrainian diplomatic car registered to the Ukrainian embassy in Warsaw. And he left Poland, and now he is in Ukraine, maybe, possibly. So he was not arrested. The Polish side said, "Sorry, we were just too late to arrest him. He's gone." And then, the new head of state, the new head of government of the new Polish government, Mr. Donald Tusk, he posted on X, all the people talking about Nord Stream, they should just apologize and shut up. So you see, it's a very, very clear message to the German government.
Stop looking. So very interesting. So it's sort of feeling like it could have been a joint Polish-Ukrainian operation, is sort of what the picture I'm forming here.
That could be the case. I mean, there's still the question, why was there the stopover in Poland at the Polish coastline? Why did the boat go come to Poland? Was there any reason to go there? Was there a reason to switch, operatives on the boat? Was there to put some equipment, some more explosives on the boat because they need more? I don't know why they were in Poland, but I don't think that the Polish government or the Polish authorities are quite interested in investigating this.
It's very interesting. And with this idea of it potentially being like Ukrainian led, has there been any information about what level the Ukrainians may have sanctioned this attack? Is there a possibility that Zelensky, President Zelensky, didn't know about this and somebody sort of operated? Because this was in the very early stages of the war, so could have somebody have kind of gone on their own prerogative? Or is there evidence to suggest that Zelensky did somehow sanction this?
There's the reporting from Wall Street Journal that Mr. Zelensky knew about this attack plan and that he then tried to stop it. And that this was basically a plan set up by the Ukrainian military, by the Ukrainian chief of staff back then, Mr. Zaluzhny, and that, you know, Mr. Zelensky tried to stop it, and then they did it anyways. So kind of a rogue operation. I don't know if that's true. I heard some people in Germany also saying that this is the information that they have. So I'm from the investigator side saying, could very well be that this was the case. What I heard pretty early in our investigation from a source was that they believe that this plan was set up even before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So that there was a plan that they created right after the construction of Nord Stream. But, you know, that they did not use it. And then the war started, the invasion happened. and then that some elements within Ukrainian military and intelligence said we should carry out this plan. And that, you know, the Ukrainian side, this was reported also last year or earlier this year, the Ukrainian side presented via intelligence channels, so back channels, so to say, to the German side, their own main suspect. And it is a man named Roman Chavinsky. And Roman Chavinsky is a former Ukrainian intelligence operative. And he was a high-ranking Ukrainian intelligence officer who is on trial in Ukraine because he apparently did something that he should not have done. So he, you know, he was basically the Ukrainian side. That's what we heard. They presented him kind of as a rogue figure, someone who just did stuff on his own. There's this very crazy operation also before the Russian invasion where they tried to trick some Wagner mercenaries and tried to arrest them and tried to, you know, that was a Ukrainian intelligence operation via Belarus, via Minsk. Very crazy thing if you look at that story. And the Ukrainian prosecutor said that Mr. Chavinsky was involved in this and that he violated some of the orders that were given to him. And he was not, you know, acting on orders of the Ukrainian intelligence or military. So this is why he is put on trial. And we heard the Ukrainian side said that this man was involved in a Nord Stream attack. Of course, he denies it, or let's say the other way, he does not confirm it. it's not like he is completely denying it. So he talked to some journalists, but he does not confirm that he was involved.
Yeah,
in it.
Yeah.
And it's very convenient to say for the Ukrainian government that because this guy is on trial anyways, so you know they can just tell the German government, yeah, we know. I mean, it was this guy, and he didn't follow our orders. He was not doing it on the orders of the Ukrainian government, and don't worry, we will put him in prison. So, yeah.
Yeah. What has been the reaction in Germany to this evidence? And have, I think I know the answer here, but have pro-Russian political entities used it to argue against providing support for Ukraine?
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Everyone is interested in the, you know, who did it. You know, it's a very controversial thing. It's a very interesting criminal case. So, yeah. Certain political parties, politicians, they are out now saying, okay, if there is enough evidence that Ukrainian nationals or even the Ukrainian state was involved, then we should rethink our support for Ukraine. We should consider, you know, not supporting Ukraine because they blew up our pipeline, they blew up energy infrastructure that was very important to Germany. Yeah, I mean, that's the case. Very right-wing politicians do that. Very left-wing politicians do that right now. And for some people in Germany, it is a very important topic. You know, they want to know who did it. And are these people responsible that at least for a certain time, energy prices went up? To be honest, energy prices are back again at the level where they were even before the Russian invasion. So German government was quite successful in, you know, getting new sources of energy. And the truth is also, it was the Russian side who stopped delivering gas even before the pipelines blew up. The Russian side came up with this explanation or whatever lie that they cannot deliver gas because something had to be redone, some reconstruction on the pipeline. So they stopped delivering gas in summer of 2022. And most people believe, also German government believes, the Kremlin did it just to raise the pressure. Just, you know, to raise the pressure on Germany. You know, there's the winter is coming up, prices are going up. So that's why they did it.
I must admit, this has been one of the things that's always fascinated me about this case. Because for it to be a sanctioned attack by the Ukrainian government, they would have been aware of the diplomatic risk of this.
I think so, yeah.
And that's why, for me, I think like the rogue, it being over a rogue operation, or a Russian operation, kind of, for me, because I think the Russians have a lot to gain from this, because if there is diplomatic fallout, then obviously it means less help for Ukraine, and that helps the Russians. That's I've always get stuck there for me on this thing.
But just remember, I mean, there's a you can look it up. There was also a press conference. Our Chancellor Scholz, he went up to a company, to Siemens, very big company in Germany. He went to Siemens because Siemens was providing, there was this centrifuge, some kind of thing that you would need, you know, for the pipeline to work again. Because apparently Russia said, we need the pipeline to be cleaned in a way or whatever to deliver gas again. And they said Germany is not delivering the equipment to do this. So the chancellor went up to Siemens, to the company, with a bunch of journalists, and he was standing right next to that equipment that you would need. And he would say, here it is, we can deliver it to Russia. You can use it, you know, to make Nord Stream, you know, work again. So what's the reason? The German government now says the chancellor did it to prove that Russia is just lying, that this equipment is there and it can be delivered to Russia and there's no problem. But just imagine you are the Ukrainian government. You are in Kiev seeing this. You see the German chancellor in I think it was in August. It was a few weeks before the Nord Stream attack. You see the German chancellor standing right next to this equipment, begging the Kremlin, basically, to restart the gas flow through the pipeline. So and then you are sitting there in Kiev thinking, oh my God, this German government is still willing to do business with Putin. And they are still, you know, willing to buy his energy and his gas. So maybe just destroy the pipeline. So there's no chance to do it anymore. Yeah, just, you know.
Yeah.
Take the decisions for the Germans. So in the end, yeah.
Well, I see that rationale from the Ukrainian side. I'm not saying that they're right to do this. I don't think they were if they did. But that, okay, from their point of view, the European economies are addicted to this drug of Russian natural gas, right? So, okay, so to get you off of it, we're going to choke off the supply and force you to get clean. However, as you've said, Nord Stream 1 was already shut down. Nord Stream 2 wasn't even fully operational yet. And most of those natural gas pipelines flow over land through Ukraine and Belarus. So you're not even choking off the supply all the way anyway. And as we've said, the diplomatic risks to Ukraine for doing this far outweigh any benefits there. It's just it's not a good plan. That doesn't mean they didn't do it, though.
I think it's highly likely that in the end it was carried out without the full knowledge of the Ukrainian government and the full approval.
And that's an embarrassment to begin with for Zelensky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he certainly changed senior members of the military over this war. So there's definitely things are not going the way he wants. And there's potential people could be doing things that they shouldn't be doing and stuff that could explain all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. If this is found, or at least sort of widely considered, because we can't get a straight answer, yes or no, if we widely think that Ukraine's responsible for this, you know, pretty serious act of strategic sabotage against the EU's exclusive economic zones, how do you think in the future that impacts a potential Ukrainian membership to the EU or NATO?
A very good question. I think, investigation is not really over. You know, there's one main suspect now in the German investigation. But the German government has promised to, you know, carry on with the investigation, to tell the German public who did it, and then also to talk to the EU about it. And I think that, I don't know, in some years' time, maybe when we are talking about full membership to EU and maybe even NATO membership, this will come up again. Yeah, of course. I mean, it was an attack. It was an attack on European energy infrastructure. And the question will be around for a long time. It is also, you know, within the communities of the conspiracy theorists or whatever. It's out there. It is a political. It's out in the political arena. It is even on the election side. You know, there are German elections are coming up next year. This could also be, you know, a topic in the elections. You know, people will ask, so who did it? So why are we supporting Ukraine when they did this? Ah.
Yeah, no, it's a very messy affair, this really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, some people, you know, some people say it's like an Agatha Christie novel. And, you know, what is really interesting is, I mean, nobody died, you know, it's an attack without any dead people laying around. but it's still, yeah, it's a very interesting case.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Matt, was there anything else you wanted to add? Because I feel like we've covered pretty much most of it. I don't think there's anything else to add there.
No, it's a very interesting caper. You mentioned Agatha Christie. I don't know how much the German authorities would like maybe a French-speaking detective coming in to solve it for them. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and I really love reading all your reporting on it. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the interest. Thanks for having me. And maybe we talk anytime soon, and there's some new development. I have no idea. Maybe there's something coming up.
We'd love to. Yeah, indeed.
Well, if Poirot or his relatives somehow crack this, then we'll have to get you back on. But before we sign off, is there anything else you would like to add, Florian? Any final sort of thoughts or anything on this that maybe we've missed or that's important to you?
Yeah, I would just wanted to say, I mean, there are so many great colleagues out there that are reporting on this that are really, I know it's pretty, pretty hard to do investigative journalism on that case, especially. I do a lot of, you know, national security related stories, and I know how to talk to intelligence people and to, you know, people dealing with secret stuff and classified documents and whatever. It is really, really hard working in that area because almost nobody wants to talk about this. Only a few people have real in-depth knowledge of these investigations about, you know, what the governments are talking on these back channels. There's a lot of good journalism out there, people who want to try to find out what really going on. And I would just say, you know, kudos to all these colleagues out there. And it's we are all doing whatever we can, you know, to present reliable information and information that we get from at least two sources and information that's been confirmed. And, you know, it's really hard on that case.
Well done to all of you and to yourself, Florian. Actually, I don't know if you've got any thoughts to add on, because I know... you know, as you're saying about investigative journalism, there's a lot of challenges in the media landscape today. I don't know if there's anything else you'll sort of add on that, because it's interesting times at the moment for journalism, isn't there?
It is. There is a lot of skepticism, hate even, towards journalists. Investigative journalism is expensive, you know. The media companies have to pay for that kind of journalism, and it's... it's not easy. It's not getting easier. But in the end, I think what really matters is that people are still interested in these stories, and we see that people are reading it, people are listening to it, people are watching the documentaries about it. So just the fact that we hired these divers, you know, for the documentary, just the fact that we showed you can go down there, you know, you can dive down. You can operate in that depth. You can see it. We prove it. We do a fact check while you know, just hiring divers. And it was an idea of a colleague of mine. It was a very simple idea. Let's just hire these people and let's see if they can do it. And they can. And this is a way to fight, you know, against these conspiracy theories, to work against them, and, you know, just to present some facts to people.
Excellent. Well, where can listeners find out more about you and your work, Florian?
Yeah, you can. Easiest would be just to follow me on X, former Twitter. It's at Florian Flade. And I'm also publishing in Germany. It's called Tagesschau.de. It's the media outlet of German public broadcaster, ARD. And just follow me on X and... you will find my work there.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Florian.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Secrets and Spies.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.